This week on RSBNB Update, we run through Game Jam 2018, highlighting our favorites. These may include incense, weapon diversity, and ability bar options, plus patch notes focusing on glacers, dominion mines, and a boatload of mobile fixes. This is RSBNB Update, episode 695, recorded Thursday, October 25th, 2018. The Smell of Incense. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSBNB Update. Tanis and myself are in this week, as we are each and every week, back with the video shows.
Here we are, our lovely faces.
Yes, yes, definitely. So, we're into the second week of the new news posting formats here at RSBNB Update with the RuneScape news, and you know, we just have a bit of a paragraph here regarding Till Death Do Us Part in the third part, and that's that Pestilence is in there this week, the third of the Apocalypse Riders and whatnot. So that's been happening until Death Do Us Part, and you know, it's interesting because in this one you can actually seemingly get killed, but it is a safe death. Any thoughts on this third week of Till Death Do Us Part?
It's kind of more the same.
Yeah.
I thought last week was more standout than this week, but I don't know. What can you say?
Yeah, and you know, I reached my max of 16 stabilizations already, so I can't go in the rift anymore. Cool. If I wanted to just go there, it's just for the XP. So, that's complete, and we're, you know, a week before Halloween. So,
yeah,
I was actually thinking about this from a design perspective, and this was supposed to be the Halloween event, but it turned out to be the October event.
And, yeah. Yeah.
You know, from a game design perspective, people who are playing the game every day are going to complete this before Halloween. And you know, because of that, I don't know if that was a good design idea, because you want people to be able to interact with this in the week of Halloween, right? So,
yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, it's supposed to be something special, like holiday oriented. And when it, you know, one, when it stretches the amount of time that it's stretching, and when it's following the same format that a lot of these other events have followed, look, the concept and the idea, I think we're okay. You know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. But definitely, I think could have been condensed within the last maybe week or something,
or 10 days, give or take,
or 10 days. Yeah, something like that. To me, it didn't feel much like a holiday event. It wasn't like the, remember the Invention Halloween event where it kind of felt spooky, you know, like there was this alternate Invention workshop where with all this cool stuff going on, you know, there was body parts and this and that. It was, had this Halloween feel to it. You know, there was the, you know, Dev's house had a Halloween feel, and even some of the, like the Nomad Halloween event, or where they had
Ixthorin.
Anyway, yes, that guy. Those always felt more like Halloween. And this, I think, I didn't really realize it until you said it. I think one of the big reasons why this isn't is because it's going on for so long. And yeah, I mean, you're done and you're a week before Halloween. So,
yeah,
I don't think it was a very good design choice. I don't know.
Anyways. Yeah. Well, the next part about it is customer support week, and it just feels like we had a customer support week. So I went to go look it up, and it was actually back last October. I feel like this happened again in May or something, but it didn't. It was last October.
It doesn't seem that long ago.
So, anyways, customer support week. Are you doing the daily clue scrolls?
I don't do cliff scrolls.
Okay. All right. Right. No, okay. No. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you get your daily clue scrolls. You know, if you have the bank pin and authenticator, you get an extra 2 treasure hunter keys a day. You can go talk to Count Check in Berthorpe and get a lamp when the week starts off. So that's all fine and dandy. Then there's also a new run of the drop, which is, you know, their quiz show style event. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's fun. It provides a bit of a laugh about security and whatnot. But there are 2 really odd questions this time around. And one of them was, for accounts made prior to 2010, these accounts will have a blank. And the choices were a login email, a login name, or a party hat.
Yeah, that's one. Let's not draw attention to that.
That's
why
both
would
of
you
us.
Do that?
That's both of us and many of the RSVNB update people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank God for Authenticator. That would have been like, what are you doing, Jagex? You know, I like the drop. But yeah, that question was weird in the other one, because I actually picked up on that from the weekly bite. I was like, oh, wait a minute, because I think you'd highlighted those two. And on the other thing, I thought with the drop this year was it didn't seem to be anything new as in rewards. You
no,
could just get
just the just the title.
Stuff.
And we can't even use the title because it's
broken.
They're still disabled.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's too bad, because it is actually a kind of a fun game, kind of RuneScape knowledge type of. I've always had fun doing it, you know.
Yeah, and there's another one. What is the halfway point to level 99? The choices being 49.5, 92, or 1337.
Yeah, none of that has anything remotely to do with account security, but it's cool little RuneScape trivia. And I'm sitting there going, "Well, who doesn't know that? who doesn't know that?" And then I think, oh, maybe there are people that don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyways, that's pretty much customer support week. Not much to write home about there. But I would like to just remind everybody to, you know, enable that authenticator, because, you know, like it or not, the authenticator is the number one way you can protect your RS account. And you can actually use that if you don't have a smartphone or you don't want to use your smartphone and you're on Windows. There's a piece of software. It's open source. It's called WinAuth. You can get it at winauth.com. And what it does is it basically provides everything that the Google Authenticator does and lets you do it in a specific app. So you just download this little tiny binary. You can you don't even need to install anything. It just runs from the file that you extract it to. And you know, this is one of the benefits of open source software, is that there are folks out there who vet this software and verify that it's safe and it's not a keylogger and whatnot. So you just run it, and when you open it up, you just go to your RuneScape account dashboard, and you click the Authenticator tab, and there will be an Enable Now button. You just click that, and then it'll give you a brief little overview about how to enable. You just click Setup Now, and literally all you need to do with that then is click the button that says Can't Scan the Code, and you'll be given a long alphanumeric text string, a string of letters, and you'll just want to copy that string of letters and dump it into WinAuth. Choose Google as the kind of authenticator. Name it RuneScape, because that's, of course, what it's going to be. Then paste that code in. Then when you hit Verify Authenticator, you'll be given a 6-digit number that is effectively counting down. And what this 6-digit number is, it's your second factor of RuneScape authentication. So you enter that number in, and after you do that, Authenticator is enabled on your account. And that's all there is to it. And what this has the benefit of doing is that every 30 days you'll be asked to re-enter your authenticator PIN. And when you do that, it's basically just a little extra step every month or so. And it'll allow you to ensure that to log into RuneScape, you need to first, of course, put in something you know which is your password, but also something you have, which is your authenticator code. And that's the beauty of two-factor authentication, is that it takes it from something to authenticate from something that just that you know to also something that you have. And that's what makes two-factor authentication, providing it's done right by the provider, in this case Jagex, and you don't send that code around. It just improves the security of your account in a very easy way. So every time customer support week comes around, I talk about the authenticator and, you know, the fact that, you know, you can have it on a smartphone, but if you don't have it on a smartphone, you can use WinAuth for it. And I think that's something that many people aren't aware of. And at the end of the day, the more secure your RS account is, the better. So just have a look. And I ran through it just here on the podcast. If you're watching the video version, youtube.com/RSBNB, you can do it there, or just go to winauth.com, download it, and it's fairly self-explanatory to use. So would recommend if you have reluctances of using it on a smartphone. So I don't think I have anything else on customer support week.
Very good. I know it's supplemental, I think, wasn't it? Or I know you've done a video.
There's a video in one of the weekly bites about that.
About the weekly bite? Okay.
Yeah, the weekly bite. For some reason, I did it back in July. I don't know why it was July, but that's probably why I did that. The link will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com for that. So you can check that out there, get the link to that video. Are you ready to move on to some patch notes?
Yeah.
All right.
Or news? I mean, because now it's news. They're not even patch notes anymore.
They're news. It's news. So
it's the news.
All right.
It's the update, Shane.
Yeah, that's right. So starting off, they've tweaked the Wabagong fishing locations in the Ark to make sure that they don't deplete too soon. So I'm guessing there was a bug here causing them to run out faster than expected.
That's good.
And, you know, Wabagong are really good fishvention and Ark Soup XP if you don't want to do the waterfall. So, the farming skill cape perk message now correctly reflects the master farmer outfit's ability to clean the herbs. Okay, that's good. That's good.
Cool.
Getting there, only have two outfit pieces left. I'm going slow.
Ooh.
Signs of the portal will now work in conjunction with collecting clean herbs from herb patches via the farming outfits, as well as collecting the player-owned farm honey varieties from the apiaries.
Oh, that's cool, because I use porters for that stuff. Cool.
I'm not really a user of porters, but I can see how they help you from an accessibility standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, next up, the crystal tool siphon will now only work on tools as it was intended.
That's odd. Okay.
I wonder if you were able to use it on a weapon and have that weapon be a couple tiers higher.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
That would have been pretty funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So, the destroy plant pots and destroy bucket setting once again operates as expected. You know,
it's broken.
Yeah, I don't use this option because I like tracking my plant pots, how many I use, because that tells me how long I've been farming.
I do destroy the pots. I did do the buckets too, but now I keep them because of the dragon stuff.
Now moving into the ninja fixes, recharging god books and Arathor's grimoire can now be done by using the object on the other. Okay. let's see. Dramatically sped up thank you respawn times. All right. I don't know. I don't know why that was needed or who uses a thank you.
Yeah.
Anywho, improve the click zone for glacers covering a wider box than just the model itself to allow more leniency with its oddly shaped models and wide sweeping animations.
That's probably a good thing. But then again, like, I hope it's not to the point where it's hard to click one over the other when it comes to the minions, like, because you don't want to leave that enduring until the last. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know. I'll have to go and check it out.
Yeah, I haven't gone and fought those in a long time.
You know, I worked so hard to be able to fight them, and then I got there and was like, I couldn't tell an enduring from an explosive, and then was like, well, this sucks. Never went back.
And I think they're still pretty good GP, too, for the boots.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Dominion mines have buff bar timers denoting when you can replace your first and second mines. And it's also now possible to pick up Dominion mines with a full backpack if you're already carrying a stack of them. And, you know, not many people know this, but Dominion mines are actually something that is incredibly useful in PVM just for the amount of damage that they can put out. That's how Syria was actually killed on the first day with the help of some Dominion mines.
Awesome. Yeah. I've never been with anyone that used to mines, but they used to. What was that other thing that PVMers always used to use from Dominion Tower? Was
the Grenwall? No, not the Grenwall.
No, but you know what I'm talking about, yeah, right? I'm thinking of
the little Slayer creature thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The name's on the tip of my tongue.
I know. Dreadnought? Is it Dreadnought?
No. Dreadnip. There you go. Not a dreadnought.
That dreadnought, yeah.
Oh, that certainly would help, eh?
Yeah, right?
All right. Essence pouches now display their degradation state in the tooltip. Those strengthened with lunar magic may go above 100% repair.
That's cool.
And we have been waiting for this for so long, I think. To know exactly when these pouches are going to degrade, so you can know, is it going to be this run? Is it going to be next run? Yeah. And the like. So, all right. Added a stepping stone to cross the river in Mosla Harmless. And I've been told I should say this is mostly harmless, but this is my French coming through. Mosla Harmless. So.
Sure. I didn't even know you were French. But...
Well, I mean, everyone here in school learns a bit of French, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, everybody here learns a bit of Spanish, but that's on the playground.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can imagine so. It's a bit of a sidetrack, but last time I was in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle area, all the Targets and Walmarts had their store signs in Spanish as a secondary. It was really, really odd seeing it that far north.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense on the West Coast, but yeah.
Anyways, following from the stepping stone in the river, seismic activities in the Asgardian Ice Dungeon have opened up an agility shortcut between the entrance and the Skeletor Wyvern Cavern. 72 agility will be required to use this.
Okay, well, that's cool. You don't have to, like, run all the way around. And, you know, good shortcut, I guess.
And I wonder at this point who uses the does anyone fight skeletal wyverns?
I don't think so, but don't you have to go through there to get to the living ones?
Yes.
So
okay, that explains it then. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, now on to some changes for mobile here. Fixed an issue that was causing client dead states, aka black screens, when users go from a dialogue cutscene, such as the introduction of the dialogue in Firemaker's Curse, to a player's choice and back to the cutscene. That apparently has been a big issue with the mobile betas. Is that you have these areas where, you know, your client will just stop, and it's either, you know, when you're changing IP or moving to a different network location, and it's really quite annoying. And, you know, it's something that needs to be fixed. It's actually one of the biggest issues with the beta, so we've heard.
Well, kind of important when it's a mobile game, right?
Yeah.
to not crash if you're,
if you're moving
mobile.
moving between cell towers. And, you know, I don't have any firsthand experience on that, but I've heard it's an issue. So,
right.
Next up, they have improved the responsiveness of the swipe, drag, and hold interactions in the app. And apparently this helps a lot with, dragging stuff between inventories and right-clicking as well, because you do need to swipe to right-click on that. So, and the example given here is that you should now find swiping as responsive before and notice an improvement in the game detecting if you want to drag an element around the interfaces, and moving items and abilities is a prime example of this.
Okay. So,
now, finally opening the mini menu, which is basically what they're calling the right-click option, is significantly more responsive and will open faster than before. And for anyone who hasn't played the mobile beta yet, basically what you do to right-click is you basically do a long press on whatever you want to open, and then it'll open up the right-click context menu as you would expect.
Okay.
And, you know, there's going to need to be a significant amount of onboarding for this when people open the app for the first time, explaining how to right-click and whatnot, because I think RuneScape is a fairly right-click intensive game. So,
yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Also, the art for the four globes, health, adrenaline, prayer, and summoning have been updated, and we actually have a screenshot of this here that was featured in this week's Weekly Byte. Let me just grab it here. But basically what they did is they made these brighter and just made them appear a little bit more as though they were, I guess you could say, mobile-centric buttons. I think that'd be a good way of describing it. So you could just have a look-see here at this. That's the wrong window. There. So basically, they're bigger, they're more shaded, and you can see right at the bottom that I think they just fit in general better with the RS art style that we have today. And I mean, you're going to want to interact with these, so I think that was a good change to make. So. And now the final fix for this is fixed an issue for mobile, fixed an issue that was causing safe areas to not be accounted for on notched devices when the user is interacting with an interface that has been made full screen. And of course, notched devices are a new thing with the iPhone X and whatnot. And I think there's some Android devices that do that as well. So, yeah, that's obviously something that they need to take into account now. So, but yeah, that's the patch notes for the week. I don't know. You have any other ones that didn't make this list?
I think those are kind of the highlights, right?
Yeah. Alrighty then. Well, there's also the subject of Game Jam, which we had a look through this stream. And it was a 2 hour and 10 minute long live stream.
Yeah.
Which
yeah. I was excited at first when I was like, ooh, a 2 hour stream. Yeah.
So suffice to say, we're not gonna go over the content of the entire live stream. What we're gonna do instead is we're gonna go over Game Jam and go over our thoughts on the various pieces of content that could be being brought in with this. So, number one, Dailyscape Productions, which in turn turned out to be a rework of the Divination Caches.
Yeah.
Basically, what came from this is that they would potentially be on a random spawn time rather than at the top of the hour. Which makes sense, I guess, because you don't want people to, necessarily feel they need to be there to do them. And what they're wanting them to become is a supplement to the divination training. And on this track, now I wonder how people will feel about this, is they'll award bonus XP rather than straight up divination XP.
You know, I think awarding the bonus I think that's fine. People's probably not going to like it. I think that it's been too long and too established to change it to a random time. That's not going to probably go over very well. I don't, you know, out of all the things that make up Dailyscape, the caches have never really bothered me as much. I mean, 'cause it's, I've never like felt like, oh, I have to do a cache.
Yeah, and you know, I think the reason people feel caches are the big issue and why this one drew attention first was because when you think about it, caches offer a huge lump sum of divination XP.
Yeah.
And for people who didn't like divination, it's just something they could go to daily. In the same vein as kind of a sinkhole to get the XP. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's okay. I don't love the random. I don't really like that change because you might miss a cache just because you weren't on.
You weren't div training at the time, and that's what they wanted to be. They wanted to be about div training.
Yeah. So I don't. I mean, I don't know. It won't be as bad as if they try to mess with the sinkholes. That's going to really.
well, sinkholes weren't talked about in this. So.
Right. I mean, I think that the daily stuff to me that really needs to be like rolled back a little bit is all of the token gathering stuff and the this and the that. And the, it's that stuff that really gets to you. And maybe some of the daily challenges, because the thing is, when you're training a certain, when you're training, well, anything for that matter, you don't want to miss out on a daily challenge. So I guess, but how do you put that toothpaste back in the tube? You know?
Yeah. It's an issue that's been created and it's something that's not going to change.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I think it was kind of like half good, but. I don't know. I don't like that they're going to mess and make it random.
And with the caveat that none of these things that were talked about or worked on at Game Jam are guaranteed to come out. Well, some of them are, but we don't know which ones yet. They're going to go into the Game Jam slots in February and January. Now, the next one was Ability Bar Defaults by Mod Sova. And basically what this allowed for was for you to choose the default action of an item. So, you know, you might, classic example being iron ore, its default is to drop, but what if you wanted the default option of that to be used? So you would be able to set that with this. And same thing with like the Edgeville sword or maybe even the cabbage port ring. You would be able to set the default options of what would be triggered, and you would be able to have multiple copies of it in your action bar. This one for me is definitely one that needs to come in because this is just a usability tweak in very much the same way that, you know, bank presets are and the automatically changing action bars have changed the game. So this one definitely needs to happen. It should have been in with the action bar when it first arrived.
Well, and this one is, it's actually going to help. It's going to help me when it comes to doing some bossing here and there. Cause there's like accessibility issues with that. Like there's some things that I have to keep in my inventory just because the way it works, you got to right click on it. But it would be a lot better if I had it in my action bar and could just use a hotkey.
Yep.
So, this is, I mean, once again, they never plan on it being this way, but it actually is kind of an accessibility update.
Back of the hand accessibility update.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So we both like that one. Next up is weapon diversity, and this has been something that's been talked about ever since EOC came out, because you know before EOC you had to use different types of weapons for various things and whatnot. And the aim with this one is to give every weapon in the type a unique effect, which spans all combat tiers. And they say a good example of this in game right now is the effect of halberds and scythes, which increase the size of AOE abilities by plus one tile. So basically this was focused on by Pi, Shogun, and Iago. And let's just go through some of these right now. So looking at melee stab, daggers would be a guaranteed critical hit against unaware enemies, so stunned, out of combat, or flank. The crit chance would now, right now, has an absolute cap of 33.3%. So and, you know, this is what the Dragon Dagger was special for back in the day with PvP, is you could get these crits off with it. And when you think about it, who uses a dagger today in RS3?
You don't.
No one.
Yeah, you don't.
So that would be good. Short swords, chance to use a main hand auto attack instantly after using abilities. Oh, boy, where have we heard that before?
Now they're just making it a
for anyone a wondering, feature. Fortick auto attacking.
They're just writing it in.
Yep.
That's great.
Rapier's chance to not incur global cooldown on your next attack.
Okay.
Hastas, gain access to two-handed abilities when used with a shield.
Oh, that's cool as shit.
Because you can only use shield abilities now with a defender and, you know, one-handed weapons.
Yeah. That's kind of neat. I like that.
Yeah. Spear, stacking accuracy buff. Clears all stacks when you move.
I was thinking about that. I was like, ooh, are we going to really – are we going to start having races to kill the corp now? Because that's the only thing I could think of that you use a spear for.
Yeah, and I mean, if you start throwing accuracy in game, that's also a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, defenders. Ah, yes, defenders. Allow the use of both dual-wielding and shield abilities, as well as provide a 3% accuracy boost. It also has a 1 in 15 chance to deflect a hit, reducing it by 50 to 100% damage, providing a plus 20% accuracy boost for the next attack. And of course, this exists in game as it is right now. So, the question is, how do you slot a defender in, right?
Yeah, I still need to get my last two. I always liked the defender. That was always like such a prestigious thing back in the day. You know, to have that.
Yeah, the dragon defender. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Scimitars heal you for a percentage of your crits.
Okay.
Claws, crits cause a bleed on the target. This would basically be a damage over time, 5 ticks, 2 cycles apart. Damage would be main hand add 66.5% of applying damage to the pool, offhand 33.5. 30-second cooldown on the target.
Okay.
And, you know, this is going back to the olden days, too, because Dragon Claws, once again, fast damage and, you know, with that bleed effect. So that would bring some of that back in. Now, Longswords, getting to what everyone wants to hear about. Every time you miss an attack, you gain an accuracy buff for your next attack. Which I think makes sense because when you think about it, Longswords should be inaccurate.
Yeah, they should be.
So... Now, battle axes deal more damage when above 80% adrenaline. Damage buff builds up the longer you stay above 80% adrenaline.
That's cool.
You know, this reminds me of the original Dragon Battle Axe special a bit, to be honest.
I'm just glad the axes are getting some love because that's always been one of my favorite weapons, but there's no reason to use them at all.
So basically the way I see this going is that let's just say we had a set of battle axes in game. You would only use basic abilities, and you would stay above 80% adrenaline. Maybe a threshold thrown in here or there. And do we have anything in game that increases how fast you attack?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, I thought we did. Maybe I'm thinking of Berserk, though it doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but I think this one's really interesting, the battle axe. Two-handed swords increase crit chance the lower the enemy's health is. This is in testing. It's kind of reminiscent of the Darok Great Axe in terms of dealing more damage as the enemy's health goes down, except this is relating to crit. And what I'm seeing here with everything we've got so far is that it allows you to specialize your game style, right? And this is something we've talked about many times before. We were hoping invention would bring, but it didn't. It basically lets you play the game you want to be played the way you want to play it, but have as much utility as everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
The scythes and halberd won't be changing, +1 range on all the attacks. Ah, now the whip. I think the whip needs some love. Every attack hits enemies in a 2-range cone in front of you, existing AoEs in the direction you're facing. Now do we have an offhand whip in the game?
No.
No.
And AoEs in front of you, like, but that's not what an AoE. I mean, that's not even what an ALE is.
Yeah,
by
it should
definition.
Just be. It should just be a cone, and they use the right term with the cone, but I think existing AOEs would be then in the direction you're facing. So AOEs would in effect become cone attacks with this.
But how do you do that with like a hurricane or a quake or something like that?
It would
that?
Just be a limit. It would just basically be limiting it from 360 down to something like 90, I guess.
Oh, okay.
The way the player is facing.
See, I don't know. I think they could have borrowed something from the what's the name of that whip? It's from the worm. It's the worm whip. It's like the tier 85.
Yeah, strike worm whip.
Yes, it's got a couple of pretty cool specials with it. Like in PvP, yeah. It can pull somebody over. Yeah. But it's also got this like whip attack where it's like, psh, 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 you know, like and the dude like swings it over his head like Indiana Jones.
I'd like to use that whip because it follows from the Abyssal whip, but there's just no reason to.
Yeah, no, I know. Yep.
Anyways, crush weapons now. Maces would be have a prayer stat bonus, which already exists in game, and critical hits pause prayer drain for a few cycles.
Seems weak to me, but
not really. I mean, that would add up over time. Imagine you're taking a mace to a Slayer task. You're soul splitting.
Oh well, yeah. I guess so.
Warhammer auto attacks AOE. Oh, so basically, anytime you use a warhammer, it would AOE around you. That seems cool. A little bit haphazard.
I hate using that word, but yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Maul stacking damage buff after killing an enemy, and it would drop off as the stack level increases. Now onto magic weapons. Wands, every critical hit fires off a spell you're choosing, provided you have the runes and you're on the right book. Once again, built in.
Let's just build it in there, you know?
Orbs increased crit chance while the opponent has an active magic damage over time. Okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, you want to put those dots on the person from their from your ability bar, and then you would get a crit chance boost on this. Books would boost spell effects, and I think that's good because, you know, spells have been the same since the beginning. Mm-hmm. What the hell is a rebounder?
Never heard of it.
That's what they're calling a different kind of weapon. Oh, those are magic shields. Okay. Allows the use of both dual wielding and shield abilities and provides a 3% ACK boost as well as has a 1 in 15 chance to deflect a hit. So the same as the melee ones. So same as melee defenders, basically.
Okay.
Spells, normal spell books, fire, enemy explodes in a 1x1 AoE on death.
Ooh, really?
Air spells, chance to deflect enemy attacks. Water, gain 0.5% damage each time a new ability is used. When an ability is repeated, this bonus is reset. And earth, every third hit will deal more damage. That seems a bit arbitrary, but okay.
Mm-hmm. I like where they did with them, though.
Yeah, like it basic because we all know that once you're high enough accuracy, you just choose fire, right? Regardless of what the thing is weak to. Now for ranged, talking about bow firing devices. So the short bow deals more damage you are the closer you are to the enemy. Shield bows take less damage while channeling. Composite bow, you can move while channeling attacks. Charge bow doesn't require arrows. That's like the Zorite bow. And the long bow has +1 range with crits lower cooldown. So.
That seems good to me.
Yeah. And I mean, would any of these make you choose a bow? I mean, obviously there's the Nox bow, but I mean, crossbows are a thing too. But would any of these make you choose, say, a short bow instead, for example, if there was a good short bow at tier 80 plus?
I think like if there was a good tier 80 plus composite bow, that one could be useful, because you could be on the move, which I guess those we have gloves that allow you to do that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know. It's kind of that's the only one I would could personally think of to. I don't know. Oh wait, well no, if a good short bow. See, it could be useful at Gemstone Dragons because you want to stay in melee range, but use ranged because that's what they're weak to.
And
So in that
then you could use
circumstance,
Bane Arrows for that.
yeah. I mean, so in that circumstance, it'd be pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bolts, two-handed crossbows, standing still for 8 ticks gives your next attack a 20% accuracy buff, and bolts would have an increased chance to proc. Which I think is good because, I mean, it feels like things die too quickly unless you're, fighting a boss for, using the bow specials, so, or the
Well, and I
bolt
wonder,
specials.
are these going to stack on the bacterial bolt
Bacriminal
effects?
bolts? Probably.
So that could be some good stuff.
Yeah, so this put I think in that case it puts two-hand crossbows up high then. Pistol crossbows, chance to double hit a basic ability. Yeah, they're just working their way all
They're just
in.
working it
The reprisers are otherwise known as the ranged defenders. Those are already in game, and same as the magic and melee ones. Now, as for thrown weapons, darts add stacks to enemies that lower defense. Stacks drop off, affects NPC, not attacker, for group encounters. So lowers defense.
Yeah, that's not enough to make me want to use darts,
No.
so I don't think.
Knife, stacking damage buff, drops off fast. I don't think so.
No, they need more work on the throne so far.
Axes, chance for an ability to chain onto the nearest target, max range 5, can stack but rolls again.
See, I would have went with a stun. You're hitting something with an axe. You know what I mean? Like a chance to stun would make more sense, I think, than that. But
All right.
well.
Javelin hits the first 5 targets in a line between you and your target. Travels past the target, range 8.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. And of course, they say chinchampas. All abilities are AoE, and we know that.
Yeah.
So. I have to say, the weapon diversity ones are also pretty good looking.
Yeah. I especially like some of the melee where it looks like they're bringing in status effects from abilities and making it putting them onto the weapons themselves. I think that's a good move. Kind of.
All right, the next one up was quest system improvements. And this is a long one, so I'm not going to go through it. It's a 10-page design document. I'm not going to go through the entire document here. But basically, in summary, with this one, we would see a revamp of the quest interface in game. So, journal, overview screen, complete screen, quest icons, blue box lighting, and so on and so forth. We would also see the path system replaced with achievement paths in game, because we all know how useless that system is.
Yeah.
And they talk about with this getting rid of the Ashdale tutorial, because right now, of course, Tutorial Island is back, but the Ashdale path system still exists.
Well, that
So.
doesn't mean that they get rid of the quest.
No,
The
because
quest
that
was
was
kind
that.
of
Yeah, that
cool.
was a great quest. That was a great
Yeah.
quest. Let's see, what else have we got here? Decluttering Burthorpe and Taverly. Yeah, this.
Please.
Yeah, because
Please.
that's just a grab bag that was used as the initial tutorial area, and I don't even know if you need an initial tutorial area anymore with Tutorial Island. No.
No, you go from Totoro Island and then you get dumped on your ass in Lumbridge, and that's the way it is. That's the way it should be. And if you start off free to play, you get harassed by trolls. That's how we did it back in my day.
I don't know if we need the quest system improvement one. Like, I mean, some of those things would be nice, but I'm going to go maybe on these.
I mean, I feel like some of the cleanup is really more of like just decluttering.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, next one is from Mod Raven, Player Owned Farm, Farmhands. And we talked about this last week. And basically, these would be kind of like the Butler system, except for farms. And there would only be, there'd be three of them. The Trapper, which is basically a person who will go out and return with a single unchecked animal of any potential type and breed except for shinies. And yes, this can include dragons. So basically what this means is they're doing this to allow, I'm guessing, Iron Men and the like to have a chance at getting dragons or people who don't want to fight dragons or skillers.
I'm not down with that one.
Hmm?
I'm not down with that
okay.
one.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was a poll that was done in Discord at Game Jam on this one.
I feel like that's the
70% yes, 30% no. 57 people sample size.
I know the prices aren't what they were, but isn't that just going to make them crash? Like, wouldn't that be bad if we all have farmhands going out and getting our unchecked animals?
No, you need to pay for him to do that.
Yeah, but we know what money is worth or what GP is worth, right? I mean, that's, I don't know. Making, what would you pay in? Maybe the the farm currency. What is the farm currency?
Beans.
Maybe you can pay them in beans.
Doesn't say if it's beans or whatnot. Oh, yes, it does. All costs will be in beans.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's better. I don't know, though. I'm not in favor of that one.
Okay. The babysitter. This is one that you apply to a specific paddock. And all animals in that paddock will no longer age past adolescent.
That's kind of cool.
Of course, for people who want to optimize and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
The collector applies to the breeding pen, and when the breeding pen is full, animals will continue to breed but will be converted into unchecked versions of their breed and will be able to store a limited number of animals, and these will be stored by the farmhand.
See, that I love the idea, but that's kind of – that's going to tank the market on them too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I don't even know if you need that one, because the point of the farm, I think, is that you should go check it daily. And yeah, there's going to be people who are going to yell at this for dailyscape and whatnot, but it's not dailyscape because the only time the farm advances is when you go in, so you can skip a few days and you'll be fine.
Right, right. Huh. Hmm. You know, I feel like the babysitter one's cool, but out of possible improvements to the farm, I feel like we're missing an opportunity here, rather than going for some of these.
Yeah, Mod Raven says he wants to focus on gameplay and not boosts overall.
Well, I mean, I get that, but... boy, I just feel like, can you imagine like the combination of the first and third farmhand thing? I mean, the market's done. Like it would, and I'm not usually somebody that worries about that, but you know, it's like you finally gave skillers one little thing to make money in, and now you're going to crash it. Okay. Yeah, this doesn't seem very fair.
I don't know. I mean, I think what I'm taking from this is that the eggs and whatnot were not initially supposed to be as valuable as they were.
Well, probably not, but when that happens on the PVM side, do they go and start increasing drop tables and all that? No.
No. Okay. you know, I wanted to like this update. I wanted to think we need it, but there's nothing in here in the farm system that screams out to me that it's needed.
No, I mean, honestly,
like the farm is good how it is right now, I think.
I think
we're at a point where it's, you know, 2 months old, and I don't know. Wait till next year to have another look at this one would be my sense on this, because, you know, like you said, the first one is kind of okay. Though, you know, I think we also need to be fair that this one could have an absolutely insane cost to it. What if it's 50K beans for each time the trapper activates or you send a trapper out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be okay, I guess. It gives people something to do with
or
their
even
beans,
10K.
I suppose. Yeah.
So. But I think the latter two are fine. And, like, I'm not going to complain if this comes into the game, but I just think that we need to let the farm stew for a bit first, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't – right now I don't feel like there's anything that is just, like, glaring deficiencies of the farm. When you do something right the first time, you don't have to keep messing with it. And I really feel like it was done right the first time, and they don't need to keep messing with it. Like I said, maybe next year look at it, but you know, I think it's good and I think people enjoy it. So, you know, I mean, I feel like those additions are really only going to help out people that aren't really into doing their farm anyway. You know?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. All right. Next up, a duo project from Breezy and Shrew, focusing in on buffing fire spirits. And, you know, the first thing that screams out to me on this one is this is a way to try and make fire making relevant.
Well, you know how the saying goes, right, Shane? You can wish in one hand and do something else in the other.
So basically the idea is that you would get a buff whenever you click on a fire spirit, and the buff will mean the next X number of logs you burn, so maybe the next three logs will give you some amount of bonus XP, somewhere between 1 to 2 times XP. So that's one chance of it. Another one is a divine fire spirit, except it additionally gives you 100 divination XP per log.
What does divination have to do with...
What?
I'm sorry. The fire spirits are a waste of time. They were a waste of time.
Especially with the pitch cap.
Yeah, it's just a waste of time, guys. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be negative, but I don't even click on them when they pop up. I'm like, ugh, get out of my way, because I don't want the crap. I'm sorry.
Next up is a bonus for using firelighters, and striking a firelighter now gives a buff for 5 minutes for stacking up to 60 minutes, allows the spirits to give 1.3 times the rewards as normal, and automatically absorbs the fire spirits when there's inventory space.
A firelighter?
Yeah, from treasure trails. The things that color your fire.
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, and see, that's because this is a color base update.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense. I'm like, wait a minute. I've never seen
Tannis is colorblind. So.
Makes sense. Okay.
Pyromaniac counts the number of logs burned at once.
It counts them? I thought it just does the whole inventory.
Catch a fire spirit, turn fire spirits into a catchable item that stacks in your inventory, similar to prawn balls. But if you're using fire lighters, they're automatically going to get caught in, so you're going to stack, of course, the benefits on these. And then a timer bar, small blue bar that shows how much time a fire spirit has left before it disappears.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, the only thing I've ever gotten from these things is like a sapphire and a gold charm or something, you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Now here's one more that's useful. Distraction and diversion teleport items. This would teleport you to pretty much every distraction and diversion in game.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Items on the list include the circus, the big Chinchampa, the giant oyster, god statues, penguin hide and seek, and wisp of the grove.
Oh man, that would be cool. Yes. I want these.
Yeah, do this one. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Do this one. Yep.
And that was simple. Next up, quest interface back button, a button to go back to the previous page in the quest interface. Okay, because you know you can click on a quest and it'll take you to the next one, and if you click on requirements and the like.
Oh, okay.
So, okay.
Sure.
I mean, that's a simple one to do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Now, here's a big one. Slayer Creature Resource Dungeons. This would be a new resource dungeon to stop competitions for abyssal demons and dark beasts. There would be 4 slots, 2 groups of 8 abyssal demons and 2 groups of 7 dark beasts. Be located outside the Mauritania Slayer Tower, requiring 100 dungeoneering. And there's potentially looking at adding a lore book to this. And as well as a small number of imps that would apparently die when using AoE to give a small chance for the imp champion scroll.
So there's a couple of things with this. One, we have a dungeon that cuts down on competition already. But I do understand that is for the higher end slayer people. You know, you have to have, you know, you have to be pretty high level for that. Okay. But you have to have a moderately decent level to even be able to hunt those things and kill them anyway. And you're slapping 100 dungeoneering level on it. So what's the chances of having 100 dungeoneering but not be into Slayer at all and have under what you would need for your own dungeon? Like...
Well, keep in mind, I mean, if you're looking at abyssal demons, you can only put 5 abyssal demons in one room, so.
Yeah, but you don't need any more than that.
Okay.
Like, you really don't need any. You can't really kill much more than that. It's because they surround you, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, there's only so many squares.
And I expect they respawn pretty quick.
They do, real quick. I guess this is... I mean, the one good thing about this is it will free up space in your dungeon.
Yeah.
You can go do these, and you don't have to have the Dark Beast and Abby there now. So that's, you know, I mean, that's good, I guess.
And I think they're looking at just ways of making the 120 skills, you know, viable. Because I won't go into the dungeoneering debate right now. Anyways.
Right.
So I think out of that one, probably... You know, I want to see what they can do with the fire spirits, but they just seem kind of right?
They seem the way that they've always seemed. You know what I mean? Like, this didn't change anything for me. So, yeah, it's definitely eh. And, like, the Slayer thing, I kind of feel like you do when it comes to the farm. Like, I'm not going to be mad about it. It's fine.
It's a dungeon, right?
Yeah.
So, and 100 dungeoneering is pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. That's kind of what I don't know if it probably even needs to be that high, but
I think the next dungeon is like 95 or 96.
Okay, well.
So that explains it.
Yeah, you know, but everything else with resource dungeons, it kind of goes along to what is in the requirements go along with what is in the dungeon. So since those are like level, what, 85 Slayer? You would think it'd be level 80, 85 Dungeoneering, because that's the level of resources that would be in the dungeon. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Yeah. All right. Next up, a potential transmogrify and emote unification menu so that you would be able to access all the emotes and transmogrifications when you turn your player into something else from the same UI.
Okay.
I mean, a little quick thing that could be slotted in, I guess. I don't really feel either way. Kind of
yeah, I don't
on that
either.
One.
Yeah.
Maud Degg presented Shield of Arav 2.
Oh.
The co-op quest.
I'm so torn on that because I love the Shield of Arav, and I hate having to work with somebody.
Well, you'll be able to complete it single if you want. Co-op will be optional.
Okay. Cool.
You know, I gotta say yes to this one just because it's Shield of Arav. It's a quest.
It's so iconic, right? Yeah. I mean, you probably still remember what group you're in, right? Like, you're the Black Arm or the Phoenix. You know, it was something that sticks with you. You know, like I can remember going on the forums, like trying to look for somebody. Like, I need to find somebody to do this quest.
The number one way to finding someone to help you with the quest these days is to join Clan Chat. Clan Quest.
There you go.
All right. The last one was Mod Timbo's Incense Burners. And, you know, he has the headline here. Actually, I'm going to scratch the Fire Spirit one. We don't need that. Because Mod Timbo's headline for this one is Making Fire Making Relevant. And Mod Timbo is just one of those guys who knows what the game needs. As, you know, I think his title is some, like, design director or something now for this. Not necessarily just involved with the Ninja team. But Mod Timbo knows what the game needs. And basically the idea behind this is that incense burners, he says, would be created using prayer ashes, herbs, and logs, appropriate to the level of each herb. And each herb would be associated with a tier of log and prayer ash. And all these are required to make the main consumable incense burner. And there are a number of different items for each different herb type of burner. So there will be a Ranner burner, a Torstal burner, a Spirit Weed burner, and so on and so forth, as well as an associated fire-making level with these. So when you light an incense burner, it's consumed and you earn a 30-minute buff associated with the type of burner that you lit. Every 10 minutes, the effect increases in potency as the burner starts to burn, and after 40 minutes, you'll have achieved maximum potency. You can burn 2 incense burners to have a maximum duration of 60 minutes, and if the effect ever runs out, you'll need to wait 40 minutes again to go back to full potency. However, you can decide to overload the incense burner as you light it, add an extra 3 whole incense burners, and it begins to burn with maximum potency from the beginning while also lasting for an hour. So you're effectively overdosing on this.
Okay.
They're tradable, but will require a fire-making level in order to use. Hey, here's a use for fire-making. At least leveling it. They currently have burners for Merintil, Herilander, Ranner, Spiritweed, Irrit, Avanto, Snapdragon, Lantadimi, Dwarfweed, Torstal, Felstock, Argway, and Samadin. Merintil provides the same benefits as the Corruption Auras. Herilander acts like a musician while resting. Ranner reduces the rate at which prayers are drained, effectively providing a prayer bonus that stacks. Spiritweed replenishes special attack energy of summoning familiars over time. Irrit will reduce the damage the player takes from poison. Avanto, chance to improve items created, such as, making a bow, it'll string it, cleaning a herb, it'll make it into an unfinished potion, etc. Snapdragon burners restore stats much quicker. Lantanimes will increase the duration of potions when drunk. Dwarfweed burners increase the chance to bank items that are produced or dropped by monsters. Torstal burners increase the amount of XP earned. Felstock burners increase the chance for elite monsters to appear, though I don't know if anyone cares about elite monsters. Argway will automatically sense, and after it reaches full potential, start to bait traps. And Samadin burners reduce the chance to deplete resources.
Okay.
And this is a fire making update that doesn't involve fire spirits, but yet fixes an issue that the game needs, takes items out of the economy, and provides a utility to players, which is perfect.
Yeah, I wonder how many of these you can have active at once.
I think you can combine them.
That's
pretty
cool.
There's nothing here that says you can't.
I like that. I mean, some of the effects are kind of eh, but some of them are really good. Like, Mod Timbo.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like this one.
And I hate to dwell on this, but I got to go back to that old school talk that we stumbled into at RuneFest.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same sense that we both got, that Ciaran and I got from that talk, is that this is what they feel OS needs. But when do we get updates like this that we feel are like this that RS3 needs, that are just utility quality of life updates that use items already in game? And this is one of those updates.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. I like the idea. I like what it's doing. You can tell somebody that is in charge of balancing came up with it because it really makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, he says making fire making relevant. You might as well call it making fire making great again, maybe.
No.
Because when was the last time someone said, oh, I need to go level my fire making so I can use something?
Said no one ever.
And they require different types of logs. You know, the higher level one require magic logs, EU logs, Acadia logs, mm-hmm. and as you go down, willow, oak, and ashes as well. Damn. I think this is my number one for Game Jam.
It's kind of looking that way, huh?
Yeah. Weapon diversity, number two. Ability bars, number three, I think.
I would probably have to agree with you on that. Yeah. This is the best one, without
yeah.
a doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
Without a doubt.
And, you know, maybe, just maybe, I don't know, yeah, they don't want to impart buffs for past 99, but, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have a fire-making outfit in the game yet, do we?
No. I wish they would have started with this on the stream, because by the time they got to it, I was asleep. I didn't even know about it. Jeez.
So. But basically, you know, it just comes down to combining herbs, prayer ashes, and logs, creating something useful out of it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's always good for the farmers to have. I mean, I'm sure this puts even more demand on herbs. And right. some of those, definitely going to be using.
Guam, I have zero use for Guam, Herolander,
mm-hmm.
Irid, I want to say. There's also ones that haven't been designed yet for Guam, Taroman, Toadflax, Regali, Quorum, Bloodweed, and Cadentine. Those ones haven't been designed yet.
Cool.
So
we've got even more coming, so.
Please do this update.
Yeah, that's good
please
stuff.
Do this update, because it just, you know, it just takes these items out of game, provides mm-hmm. utility, and provides utility to a skill that is just a way of burning money these days.
Yeah,
and you know, after this, just like the fire spirits are fine and whatnot, but this is an order of magnitude or two. More interesting than fire spirits, in my view. So,
yeah, that's why I love that fire making animation with the party hats, because that's so what you're doing. You're just throwing money in the fire.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, this is the kind of update that would make me level fire making, I think, if this were to arrive. And I'm already 99 fire making. Believe it or not, that was my fourth 99 as a result of a race, and I haven't touched the skill since, but this is something that's damn appealing. So
yeah, that's cool.
Now I'm gonna actually let me just think here for a minute. Do we got anything to do with that? If you're looking for something to do with the bloodweed, have it being a farming-based incense burner that will lower disease chance for the time it's active.
That might be cool.
Because that's the highest level herb we have. And it can only be grown in the wilderness.
Yeah. But that one doesn't get sick anyway, right?
No, it doesn't. But I'm just thinking for the rest of the farming scale, because there's nothing in here for farming.
That's true. Yeah, there isn't anything for farming.
So that's why I would go with that.
Yeah. There's nothing in there for fishing either, though.
No. But do we need anything for fishing with deep sea fishing and whatnot?
I think an increased chance to catch would be okay, because that would still be applicable, you know,
right,
for everywhere.
It's
other
gonna,
than
it's going to stack, and you're only going to reach full potency after 40 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. What herb would you use for that? Your choices are guam, tamarind, toad flax, regali, quorum, and catentine.
I'd probably use the catentine because that's a higher level than the others, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, not toad flax,
yeah.
But I mean, it's, yeah, it's not guam is
yeah.
what I'm saying.
you know, just looking at the herb market here, guam, marantil, harilander, ranner, irrit, avanto, catentine, quorum. Those are the herbs that are really low value right now. The rest are high value. So that's also something I think that should be taken into account with this, is put the more appealing boost behind the herbs that are currently lower valued, and that will presumably make those go up in value.
See, I think the problem with that, though, is the ones that are lower valued are lower leveled. So that makes that –
Well,
Ranner. You know,
hear it?
Yeah. That's true. I would have liked to have seen the Marantil have some kind of connection to prayer, because that's what it was always used for. So I would have liked to seen the prayer boost with that one. But
okay,
that's nitpicking. I mean, I'm nitpicking at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing that for this update, then we're on the right track. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good way to round off the game jam. Session here. And it does have something to do with prayer, Tanis, because it has the same effect as the corruption aura, and the corruption auras at tier 1, 3% of your prayer points will be restored per 500 prayer XP gained.
Oh, I had that mixed up with the corruption scrimshaw thingy, right? Is that the one you use for Slayer?
Yeah.
Causes aggro. Okay, I had that mixed up. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Good deal.
So it is prayer-based.
Cool.
I thought it was, but I had to double check. All right, so that's Game Jam. You know, we started off kind of slow, but I think we found the winner.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on to listener discussion.
Discussion?
Listener questions and discussion in just a moment. But first, I'd like to take a moment to remind everybody about our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/RSBNB. And, you know, we're doing this, and we have a wonderful batch of subscribers here to our Patreon this week. And this week for the show, we'd in particular like to thank Cody T, Kyle, Brock H., and Alvaro L. So thank you guys for supporting RSBNB Update and in what we do and making what we do possible. And in case you're wondering what these folks and everyone else who is mentioned in the show notes have signed on to, you can find more about that at patreon.com/RSBNB. But for a brief rundown, $1 a month, you get a mention in our show notes and early access to the show notes when we post them. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on our Discord server, which you can join. Anyone can join just by heading over to rsbnb.com/discord. A special mention on the podcast at the start of every month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the podcast, just so you can hear that wonderful music. And if we ever play any music on the show, you want to hear that in its full glory. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out on the podcast every week and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, in addition to everything else and helping fund the cost of running RSBNB. So if you want more information on that, you can find that at patreon.com/RSBNB.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so we have a bit of a follow-up from last week with the RR Man, so let's just jump straight into that right now. First a question, then a follow-up.
Accepted. I just want to know, a couple of achievements. You got any ideas for a couple of cool achievements, a couple of fun achievements they could add into the new system, or maybe even some serious achievements that they're currently missing? For example, skilling achievements. So this is RR Man. Hey! RR Man here. I just want to respond to my question from last week, and I think I might have found my own answer after listening to all of your opinions. So I see your side of the story, but I also see the other side of the story, and I think it's just a lose-lose here. So I think the only option I have is just to abstain from any future Skill of the Mumps. Because let's say, okay, yeah, it's not cheating, but it's a broken system, unfortunately, now, and, well, it's just not really fun. To be honest, after that. And at the end of the day, there were no prizes for the competition, so I think fun was the prize in a way. And I don't want to get too far into it, but I'm sorry, the phrase "get good" cannot be used in this situation, Tennis. I just can't agree with that. So I'll just jump out of any of the competitions, and hey, maybe Sorensen will end up being compete with himself. Hey, if you do put the achievement ones in, I will give that a try, though, because I think that's the way going forward. And I think Jagex wants that to be the new way going forward as well, but unfortunately, you can't just take away the high scores. Well, you know, you can't just move them to the side for the new system, because you'll have a lot of whingers, you'll have a lot of Redditors on their case. But anyway, I better add a quick...
Thank you, Mr. R Man. You know, I just want to say with this, you know, what we do here is everyone is entitled to send their questions in, and I actually really enjoy hearing responses to questions in the form of questions. I think that's a good thing, so definitely keep that up. Last weekend, I did do a bit of a field test. We do have the ability to run an achievement-based rune score competition, believe it or not, so that should be fun. We're going to run one of those in November. We're not going to run it for the whole month, because I think competing the entire month for achievements would be probably a little bit too much. So I think we're only going to run it for half the month, probably right smack dab in the middle. So you can pay attention for when we're going to do that. We'll run it for 14 days, see how things go, and take the pulse after that and see where we can go with that. Because believe it or not, this actually opens up a number of other possibilities in that we could actually run a competition to see who could do the most clue scrolls in a month, too. Who could do the most hard early clue scrolls.
Well, that's cool.
So we have that ability,
for all
too.
The clue scroll lovers out there.
Yeah. But there's that. And November Skill of the Month will carry on as planned, with cooking being the Skill of the Month. But more on that later. So achievements that could be added for the achievement bonanza in November. And that's actually partially why I want to run it for 2 weeks. I want to run this competition in line with when that update's going to drop. So what would you add for achievements to the game?
Boy, that is a good question. It's a real good question. The only one I can think of right now, I mean, there's so many, right? I mean, there's so many. The one I'm thinking of right now would be a farming speed run. Like, how fast could you?
Yeah, I think they mentioned
get to all your patches or something. Oh, did they mention that?
Yeah, they mentioned that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, well. There you go. Then it must be a good idea, right? I didn't even remember. I mean, I was thinking about like something to do with fishing, but there's so much RNG that would be kind of – might be difficult. Like
how
– you know, catch a certain number of fish, you know, within a certain amount of time, something like that. Or better yet, like fishing frenzy, like – achieve a certain streak
and hold that streak for a certain amount of time. Streak.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I'll go with that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the XP tops out, but I think the counter keeps going up, if I recall correctly on that.
That's what I thought.
All right. As for me, I'd like to see something that, you know, I always go back to this, and I'm going to try and find a way to get it into game in some form or another. I'd like to see achievements for getting XP beyond level 99, beyond level 120, and providing you some way to show that off, aka the prestige system. I don't know if they'd be able to continue to track beyond 200 mil. I don't know if there'd be a way to get around the issue of 200 mil, but I would definitely like to see, you know, hey, you just got an additional 10 million XP in farming. You have got 13 million XP in farming. You just got 99 in again. Oh, you got an extra, 20 mil, so on and so forth. Just basically a goalpost way of tracking how much XP you get in a skill beyond 99, beyond the 120 cape, just to give a reason to keep going. And it would be an added bonus if you could keep that going beyond 200 mil, though I don't know if that would be possible. So that would be my biggest one. Other ones I think I'd like to see... I'd like to see something related to maybe, I don't know, most agility shortcuts used in the shortest amount of time, in 10 minutes maybe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Kind of track, you know, your awareness of the map and where you can go to use shortcuts and the like. I don't know, maybe something with fire making too, but how do you work fire making when... We just talked about how useless of a skill it is, right?
You know, maybe how long of a line can you get before the first fire burns out? Something like that, you know, like...
You definitely need the pitch can to complete that one.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
And, you know, you could have one for without pitch can and one for with pitch can, though I think you're inherently limited... based on the ticks in games, and that might be a bit be a bit questionable on how fast you can do it. Other skilling wise, I mean, I think it's hard to do achievements for Herblore just because it's random chance based. If you get a 4-dose potion, and just like the same thing with everything else, it's all time based, right?
So, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there'd be a way to tie in daily challenges with this and, you know, say one batch of daily challenge could be to make 100 super attack potions. The next one could be 250, then 500, then 1,000. And each one of these you get rewarded with the next level of the achievement for it. And I don't know. I keep talking about ways to show these off. I feel almost like you need like an achievement post, kind of like a clan vex, that you can show off your top achievements on without someone examining you.
Yeah, that would be cool. Well, and I think there could be some tie-ins with the daily challenge system, like going on the you could do some sort of a streak achievement, like I have X number of daily challenges in a row without missing one, kind of achievement. Which I know is like daily scape, but it's an achievement. It's just rune score. It's whether if you want to or not, you don't have to. Something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a few ideas there. I'm not really much of an achievement hunter, so it's not something that was in top of mind, but those would definitely be the biggest one. Oh, I, of course, can't forget the number of herbs harvested.
Yeah, that would be awesome. There's a whole lot of RNG in that, though.
Yeah, my record is 112.
It'd be fun, though. 112, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot.
Yep.
I've never came close to that at all. Not even relatively
and
close.
And I haven't even delved into using Ultra Compost yet for them, so that can go higher.
Oh, geez. Wow. Yeah, I don't even know what my record would be. I doubt I've even came close to 50 or 60. I mean, I would really doubt that.
Well, if you came close to 60, you'd be averaging about 8 or 9 per patch, which is above average. Do you use a wilderness patch?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to say like I average like 6 or 7.
Six or 7 is average without the modern boosts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes up to about 7.9, 8-ish if you're using all the modern boosts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm, you know, half the time I forget to activate my aura.
Right.
And this and that.
Yeah, you gotta make a routine out of it. So.
Yeah.
Alrighty, thank you, RRMan, for that question and response. And you know, this goes out to everyone as well. If you want to send responses to your questions, please do that. That's entirely allowed. And to do that, you can email questions at rsbnb.com, call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632, or leave us a DM or at mention on Twitter at rsbnb.
You know, Shane, before we move on, can I just add something really quick?
Yes, please.
I don't want to beat the dead horse, but I might jump on and see if I can ride it for a little bit. Probably a poor choice of words saying get good. Unfortunately, I have a bad habit of getting a little heated when annoyed. What I should have said was get over it, because that's what I meant. And I know that get good in the gaming world is kind of a derogatory term. What I do mean is get over it, because I have been on that other side too, right? I have been beat by bonus experience. I have lost competitions because of that. And that is why I felt so strongly and so annoyed, because I feel a lot of us have been in that situation, and most of us don't take our ball and go home. So I should have probably phrased it different. But at the end of the day, you know, I was a that's me, you know.
And you know, my general sentiment of it is that if Jagex gave us a way to change that, I would. I think I've shown a great deal of good faith by getting the achievement skill of the month, or skill of the bi-weekly or fortnight, I guess, available to work. And we're going to do that when that update drops in November, coincided with the achievement bonanza. And, you know, like we said, this has been something that's been talked about behind the scenes before, but there's just no way around it. And at the end of the day, it's a skilling competition with no GP prize, as the RR man mentioned, and it's not worth getting worked up over.
Yeah, exactly. Well, could you imagine if there was a prize involved? Geez, yeah. It'd been 10 times worse.
Yeah,
you know?
Precisely.
So, yeah. No. So I just wanted to add that, you know, I understand. Just, you know.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. But. Alrighty, so we're going to move on to tech news, and we're going to be demystifying some of this tech news here, because oh boy, the press is clamoring for something that they should not be.
Yeah.
So this week, the iPhone XR pre-orders were announced last Friday, and it's going on sale this Friday as the show is being released. And you know, the headline with this is from The Verge: the Apple iPhone XR review, better than good enough. And, you know, the colors of the review are stated in the first two paragraphs here, and it goes as follows. Here's a question. How much do you care about the display on your phone? Take a moment and really consider it. If you were to put a dollar amount on it, how much would having a perfect display be worth to you? Apple has an answer, and it's $250. So The core of this review is that the difference between the XR and the XS in terms of quality is that the XS just has a better display. And yes, that's true. It has what's called an OLED display, which produces deeper blacks, richer colors, and can get closer to the edge and create that bezel-less look. And you know, by comparison's sake, the iPhone XR, which is the cheap device of the year. And, you know, I think anytime you're talking about smartphones, and let me just pull up the price here, what they're at in Canada. But anytime you have a device and the cheapest one that you can get for buy-in is, let's see, what are we at here in Canada? And I know many people in the US and whatnot go on Carrier. People still do in Canada as well. Yeah, $1,029 Canadian for the iPhone XR. And this is being called a device that is good enough. by The Verge, and it's their recommendation for this. And of course, you know, you get an aluminum body versus a stainless steel body. You only have one camera, though it's a pretty good camera compared to that you get on the XS. Of course, the XS is going to be better and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to what you use your phone for and if you really want that screen quality on it. And, you know, it's a review. It goes through the quality and the devices, like the highlights of it, the photos and whatnot that it takes, which is fine. And it, you know, compares the iPhone XR with the Pixel 3. And I don't know, you know, looking at these photos here, I prefer the photos that come out of the Pixel 3 compared to the XR, to be honest. And I don't know if that was the intent of the review here, but it is what it is. And, you know, you can tell the way the review is going. It's Verge is a, you know, I'd call them an Apple-friendly case for the most part. But the final paragraph of the review says, personally, I would pay the extra money for a better OLED screen in a heartbeat because I'm extremely picky about displays. But I think most people can find better ways to spend $250 on things like infinite black levels and a 60% wider dynamic range when viewing photos. And in that case, the iPhone XR is a no-brainer upgrade. So this is the $250 difference that is being talked about in this display between the XR and the XS. And the XR actually has a lower resolution display than the XS. And I'm going to get you the exact numbers here right now for those that care. The XS has, or the XR, has a 1792 by 828 pixel display, creating a resolution of 326 points per inch PPI. So 326 PPI. Now, if we go over to the iPhone XS, which is the high-end model that Apple has been talking about this year and runs that OLED display, that has a 2436 by 1125 pixel resolution display coming in at 458 pixels per inch. And, you know, it's the reviewer says it's the same 326 PPI as Apple's previous phones and whatnot, and for anyone coming from one of those phones, it'll look exactly the same. But in reality, this is the same PPI that we've had, you know, even with the iPhone 4. But that was a 4-inch display, and this is a 6.1-inch display, and that's a pretty huge difference. And effectively, what that results in is you getting the effective resolution of a 720p display on this device. And for, you know, this huge price that is being talked about in this review, as I said, $1,029 Canadian, I believe, $900 US, or maybe I think it's $900 US, not on a contract, for an outlet like The Verge to call it a no-brainer upgrade, it's completely, well, to put it mildly, completely horseshit. Because
couldn't agree more.
I mean, you're paying that much for something that has a display that has the same PPI as a device that came out in 2011, which means that it's going to be 720p at best.
Yeah.
So yes, while it looks good, it's still something that's hideously overpriced.
Well, because at the end of the day, they have figured out how to give you less, make you excited, and you're still paying more than you used to for it. Like, what? Like, are we that dumb, like, now? I mean, apparently we must be.
A 325 PPI display is fine on an iPhone 8. It's probably even okay on an iPhone 8 Plus, but when you have a 6.1-inch display, it should be a little bit more.
You know, and that's the whole time I'm sitting here going, why on earth – and I've had this argument about the 10 altogether, but why on earth would I ever spend $1,000 on a 10? It's not – I don't feel like it's that much better than the 8 that I have. Like, I just – I don't see
it. You have the 8 Plus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a damn good camera.
Yeah, I don't feel like the extra money is just justified. I mean, that's a lot of money, and I don't know. I mean, maybe people from The Verge pays really well, but a lot of us don't.
Yeah, and you know, it's that classic coastal thing where, you know, I honestly don't think that the people writing these reviews understand the way normal people use tech devices.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not every, you know, if you're on contract, maybe every 2 years you get a new device for, you know, $200. But, you know, if you're going month to month, or even if you live in Europe, you're not gonna get a new device every 2 years when you're effectively paying the same price as you would for a computer.
Yeah, no, you get a new device when it breaks or when it's just so old that you need a new one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this is a high dollar purchase. Yeah. Like it's not just a phone. I mean, when you're talking about $1,000, that's a computer.
Yeah.
Like now we're talking about a computer. A good computer. Yeah. You know? Like, I mean, and yeah, it's got a nice camera. You know what kind of a camera you can get for $1,000? You know? I mean, I don't know. It's way too rich for my blood.
Yeah, and you know, this is going to be the one that's going to sell out. This one's going to sell like hotcakes. People aren't going to notice the difference in screen size or screen quality if they're coming from an iPhone 7 or an iPhone 8 because it's the same PPI. But if you're coming from an 8 Plus or 10, you're going to notice it. And you might even notice it if you're watching HD videos on it. So. And you know, I am entirely certain that for anyone who goes out there and, you know, at Christmas time, cause you know, we're going to see deals around Christmas where you can get the iPhone XR, for $99 on Carrier, you're going to see those deals. And by all means, it might then be a no brainer upgrade, but it is not a no brainer upgrade if you have a modern device or you bought your device outright. In fact, if you bought your device outright, you would probably want to spend the extra to get the XS just so you are future-proofed in that regard. But
that's always been one of my arguments of when you were spending that much money on anything, then at that point an extra $250, I really don't care as much about that as I do getting the best that I can get, because I'm already putting up a lot of money. You know, so like I want the best that I can get when I'm already spending $1,000. What I mean, $1,200 at this point isn't that different.
Yeah. No. And you know, there's also the Pixel 3 launching, which has a buy outright cost of $799, $100 cheaper than the XR.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't spend $1,000 on a phone, but
no.
I'm just saying, if you're gonna do it, then you might as well do it all the way.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm just checking my local here. Yeah. Here, you can get the XR for $99, $100 on contract for 2 years. So, and that's what people are gonna buy.
Yeah.
If you want the XS, that jumps up to $430.
I don't know if this was brilliant on Apple's part or terrible.
Well, I mean, like, it's effectively the same phone on the inside. It's just a different camera and screen.
Yeah.
Because the same CPU, the same RAM, same everything. So.
I know, but I feel like it's brilliant from a business standpoint, because they'll probably sell a lot more of them. But at the same time, it's kind of evil because you're getting over on us.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
All right. Let's move on to our next piece of tech news here. And this is something that raised some eyebrows when it first arrived. But there's a couple of interesting things that are with this story. And last Friday, we had a headline that Google is going to start charging a license fee for all device manufacturers who want to include the Google Android app package on their phones. So, you know, Gmail, Google Maps, etc. And built into this stance from Google was also that if you are shipping a modern Android device, you need to ship security updates. And you also need to ship operating system upgrades guaranteed for 2 years. If you're shipping a modern Android device, that's going to have over 100,000 activations. So basically that means any modern smartphone that you buy is going to need to receive updates for 2 years and receive security updates in a reasonable amount of time if it's an Android device. But there's also a little interesting thing that they did here with this. You remember the EU fine, where the EU fined Google for trying to build in your supposed antitrust?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what actually happened with this is that Google is now licensing these their software. So, for example, a company like Samsung, who makes a flagship phone, would need to pay $40 per device to include that software on it. And the idea behind this is that switching to a license fee basically allows Google to keep its services on the phone. But what ends up happening with this is, you know, hey, you're paying for this license fee. Therefore, we're not a monopoly anymore because people are paying to have our software included on the phone.
Guess who gets to pay more?
They're going to pass it on to the user. And yeah, that's not what the EU wants, but it's the way around it. And I don't think there were very few publications that actually noticed this, but the alternative is, hey, you don't get access to the Android Play Store. So by Google, or rather the EU forcing Google to say, hey, you can't bundle these pieces of software because it's monopolistic, Google can say, hey, we're making the manufacturers pay for it. It's fine. So that's the response to this. And, you know, it's unfortunate for the consumer because it'll be passed on, but this is the way the EU wanted it.
You know, I'm always a huge advocate in anything antitrust, because I feel like I don't think they were actually guilty of that in that situation.
No.
And I really think I don't know how you charge people for something that they've been getting for free forever.
Yeah, and plus what's interesting is it scales based on pixel density, because in theory, the higher quality of a phone you get, the more pixel density it has on the screen. So a very high-end phone with a high pixel density pays the most.
Right. Well, and I think it's good that they're forcing manufacturers to have to do the support and the updates and the, you know, make security
definitely,
better.
Definitely.
Like, that stuff is good, but I feel like the EU's heart was in the right place, but it just played out badly. And we're going to have to pay more. And I hate that too, because it's like, why is it always passed on to the consumer? Why can't they take like $40 less profit? I mean, that was supposed to be the point.
Yeah. But, and, you know, in economics there, this is something that is entirely avoidable by the corporation in this case, the smartphone manufacturers, because people will buy the phone regardless. So it's something that just gets passed on without thought. No.
It's too bad.
But yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about the EU antitrust case when it came about, and you know, I don't think the EU thought it would go this way, but here it is.
See, that's where they were wrong. Always think the worst about a big corporation when it comes to maximizing their profit. They are not people. They are not moral entities. They are a machine that we have engineered with one purpose, to maximize profit. So yeah, you should have thought that's what they would do, because you need to think like they're going to think, which is really easy to do. How are they going to maximize profit? If you cut one way off, what are the other ways they're going to go about it? You know what I mean? Like, this shouldn't have been a surprise. You should have been able to see this coming.
But hey. Anyways.
Oh, well.
It doesn't affect us. We're not in the EU.
Right, yeah.
Now this
Sorry, guys in the EU.
Yeah, this next one is an absolutely hilarious story. We don't know if it's true because, of course, it does involve Russia. But Samsung has sued their brand ambassador $1.6 million after she was caught using an iPhone in public.
Apple can't buy that kind of publicity. This actually goes on, though. I've heard a lot about it the last couple weeks, actually. Maybe it's because of this story or whatever, but yeah, I've actually heard this.
Yeah. This was a $1.6 million lawsuit against brand ambassador and Russian socialite Ksenia Sobchak after she was caught using an iPhone 10 on camera despite mediocre efforts to hide the phone behind a sheet of paper. And you can see the shot of that happening right there in this. And they say what's even more damning about this is that she was spotted at social events using her personal iPhone as well. And the report makes note that she is required by contract to appear in public with her Samsung smartphone.
Well, then that's where they got her. So they say she's a socialite. So we're talking like an Instagram model type person, right?
You know,
if that is your brand and that's what you have to offer and that's why you're being paid, then.
And I've always said that about Samsung, you know? Like, Samsung might make, you know, good phones technically when they don't explode. But if this is what they're having to resort to for marketing in the era of Pixels and iPhones, they might have to reconsider some things.
Well, and the thing is, like, is it that hard to find somebody that likes – that genuinely likes their Samsung? Like, surely there is some kind of person, celebrity, Instagram, whatever. There's got to be somebody that's really into their Samsung. But – and I've heard this before. Look – she can use her iPhone all she wants at home in the privacy of her own home when she's not doing you know, that. That's fine. But her contract says when you're in public, you have to use this phone. And she knew it was wrong or you wouldn't be trying to hide it behind a piece of paper. Like, how Russian is that? Yeah. I mean,
and,
I don't know.
And, you know, Samsung denies that there's a lawsuit involved in this, which, I mean, I think that's a natural thing to do, right?
I guess I don't. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know why you would deny it's a lawsuit if someone's in breach of contract. I mean, they're in breach of contract.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's pretty cut and dry. Man, Apple just – they can't –
they just can't win. They just keep winning against Samsung.
Yeah,
you know?
They
also make note that Kate Upton a few years back was supposed to promote the Galaxy Note 10 but was seen using her iPhone at an event, and as you know from this podcast, we had the exploding Samsungs as well.
Yeah, when are celebrities going to realize, like, there's always a camera, like, always? And if you don't want to do that, fine. Don't take the contract.
Yep.
Don't take the money. You know?
Alrighty, that's it for tech news this week. We're going to move on to Skill of the Month right now, and Sorensen is still in the lead in our Agility Skill of the Month. Not much to report there on that 70.5 million XP gained. But we can say that the November Skill of the Month will be cooking, so if you want to sign up for that, just head on over to rsbnb.com/skotm, and you can sign up, enter your name, and take part in the cooking Skill of the Month. And as I said, we'll be running that RuneScore Skill of the Month or Skill of the Fortnite when that update drops in November. So stay tuned for that as well. But
you know, cooking was my next 120 on my on my list. Might have to whip something up here, Shane.
sailfish and then sailfish soup.
I was going to make Admiral Pies.
Oh, okay.
You know, don't tell my secrets. No, of course not. I'm cooking lobster. I'm broke, man.
Okay. All right. I think we have an idea of what Tannis's plans are. So. All right. Let's talk about some achievements right now. So we got a number of them this week. So starting off on the 24th, we got Sina ATN with 99 agility on the 24th. Gate got 99 ranged on the 22nd. Rune Dragon got 99 strength and 99 attack on the 21st of October. And Archies got 99 attack on October 21st as well.
All right. And then we had Wily with 120 invention on October 21st. Howl Bacon with 99 farming on October 20th. I love that name.
Okay. Varagi Bard.
Varagi Bard.
That's a tough one.
It's like, oh my God. Okay. 99 divination on October 20th. And Max 374 with 99 fletching on October 20th.
Nicely done, everyone. Good achievements. Good achievements all around. So nice. I'm going to do a pick of the week this week, and this one's a YouTube video. You know, this one goes back a number of years, and this is something that it's fun to watch. And I mean, for anyone who's interested in space or aviation, this is going to be a good pick of the week. And this is called How to Land the Space Shuttle from Space. And, you know, it's a illustration / talk that was given by, I'm guessing he had something to do, someone in, it was at Stack Overflow remote meetup in Philadelphia. And obviously this guy has not landed the space shuttle before, but it goes through the actual operations manual of the processes that have taken place. So this guy has not been at the controls before, but this is indeed the process that was taken to land the shuttle on all of its missions. And it's actually quite something to watch because, you know, you're up in space. You're up in space 330 kilometers up orbiting. And people might not think about this, but the space shuttle when launched into space, was launched into space with booster rockets and a main hydrogen tank for its engines. And it jettisons both the booster rockets and the hydrogen tank on the way up. So basically what needed to happen with this is that there's a small amount of fuel left on board for, you know, course corrections and steering and whatnot in space. But there's also a bit of fuel left on board to begin the deorbit burn that brings the space shuttle back to Earth. And just because of the way it orbits the Earth, they need to wait exactly for the precise time so that it's effectively, think of it as jumping on one of those moving sidewalks at the airport, while not only it is moving, but you're moving as well. So that is the general sense that was taken with this. And they're effectively targeting a 15,000-foot runway from 330 kilometers up in the atmosphere. And what they need to do with that is they need to burn off enough speed, but not too much that they crash, and they can't come in too fast, otherwise they burn up like Columbia did in 2003. Though that was due to a fault in the heat shield. But basically, there's no fuel involved, and it's all steering and using the aerodynamics of the vehicle, which is not aerodynamic at all. So, so basically, the space shuttle does a series of S-turns throughout the upper atmosphere to bleed off speed. And it's not until it reaches the very final threshold of its landing, most times in Florida, that a person takes over and lines up for the runway and actually takes control of the vehicle. And even doing that, they're landing it at two or three times the speed of a commercial jetliner and at about 10 times the angle of attack of a jetliner when it's coming in. So keep in mind that, you know, while it looks as though it's all natural and whatnot when it's happening, this is a non-aerodynamic vehicle landing, being controlled by a human in the final stages of flight that, for all intents and purposes, a normal pilot would deem as crazy to come in that steep and land that way. So this is a 17-minute video. It goes through the various processes that are involved in that, and from all the way up to the point at which it lands. So if you're at all interested in space or aviation, this is something you should probably give a watch. Find a link to it on the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
Very cool. I'm going to have to check that out. I've never seen it. I have down in at Johnson Space Center at NASA, you can like try to land, you know, the simulator, try to land it, and they describe it as trying to land a flying brick.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I never did it right. Yeah. Didn't have it.
Because it's very, because the envelopes for that vehicle are very limiting. You know, you're either in the air or you're not. So, yeah. But you know, I think for all the costs that were incurred by the space shuttle program, and you know, they lost Challenger going up, and they lost Columbia coming down. I think overall it was very successful and an engineering triumph, all things considered. So.
Oh. I miss it. That was like, and especially in times like these, that was one thing that all Americans could be, man, you could be proud, you know, like we had a hell of a space program, you know, like that was something to be proud of. That was cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, technically NASA considered the shuttle a failure because it was planned to be able to take off horizontally too.
Yeah. And so it was supposed to go up every 2 weeks, but you know, near the tail end of it, it was every, you know, 3 or 4 months only. So,
yeah, but I loved it. And I think, yeah, like you said, it was tremendously successful. Yeah.
And it was so successful that even the Russians copied the orbiter. Though.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
I thought they're still coming down in like the.
Yeah, they are.
But
they never got it off the ground. Look up Space Shuttle Buran. They never got it off the ground because this was when the Soviet state was failing.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Oh, I gotcha.
But they literally copied the orbiter, you know, to the T. They made it a bit bigger, but they copied it.
Huh. Okay.
Some even said that the Russian orbiter was better and would have withstood, you know, cases like the Challenger and Columbia. But who knows if that's just Russian propaganda or what? But
yeah, because I mean, their cars are known for, you know, being just awesome performance automobiles.
Anyways, what have we been up to this week in RS?
I have been doing some farming. Really, that's about all I've been doing. It's just doing some farming, getting ready for whenever the next double XP comes. I'm hoping to have some of my own stack of herbs.
I assume February.
Yeah, I would think so. So I'm trying to get the herbs going because you never know. There might be something going down with that. I could end up with another clan competition. The big boys are about tapped out, so I guess that leaves me. But that's really been about it. I've been playing a lot of like retro games this week too. So diving into the old stuff, taking another look at the 64 because I missed that console. So yeah.
All right. You know, as for me, just doing a bit of Slayer, trying to finish off this scythe and siphon it and maybe put it away for a bit and, you know, head back to fishing. You know, I have mixed feelings about Slayer. It's okay, I can do an Abyssal Demon task in 25 minutes. Okay. But beyond that, I don't know. I just find it boring.
It just depends. I don't know. I always kind of enjoyed Slayer just because it gives you something to... It's combat without bossing, and that's kind of what I like about it. But, put some cool stuff in your dungeon, Shane.
Yeah, I actually filled that up filled up one room so far with Abyssal Demons, trying to decide what to do next.
Gemstone Dragons, man.
Okay, that's actually
they're good, dude. Their XP is good. It's good, and because it's in that smaller space, it's a lot easier to stay in melee range with them.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So.
Neat.
I don't know. That's one that I think is a good one. Moospas are another one that people like. You know, things that are hard to get to or just a pain. Those are the ones I recommend.
All right. But, you know, aside from that, you know, checking the farm daily, yeah, keeping up on that and the like. So not too much interesting. So with that being said, we will see you guys next week for another episode of RS B&B Update. If you guys want full show notes, update.rsbnb.com. You can join us in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. You can also join us in the RSBNB Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord, and that'll pop you right in. And we're also on Twitter at RSBNB, where you can give us a follow and whatnot. See all the Informer articles and the like. I think we got one coming out from you this weekend, and we got our two RuneFest ones that are still out there and still hot from last week. Sirion's great article from RS with friends to friends with RS and my one RuneScape community at RuneFest. So give both those a read. Very nice. At informer.rsbnb.com. Anything else for you?
Nope. I think that's it.
All right. Well, in that case, we'll see you next week, everyone, and have a good week.
Take care.